Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Oncology. This podcast aims to provide an update on current understanding of the underlying pathobiology of esophageal squamous cell carcinoma, ESCC, and considers the potential impact of current and emerging immunotherapies on clinical practice. Financial support for this medical educational activity has been provided to Touch IME by an educational grant from Novartis. In this first interview, Professor Ken Cato outlines current understanding of the underlying pathobiology of ESCC, including the primary mutations that are implicated, key features of the tumor microenvironment, and potential biomarkers for individualized therapy to improve patient outcomes.
Hello, my name is Ken Cato, National Cancer Center Hospital in Tokyo. My specialty is chemotherapy for the upper GI cancer, especially for the esophageal cancer. The most common mutation in esophageal squamous cell carcinoma is PT53, for example, the CCDN1 or SOX2 or PIK3CA. But the most mutation does not the target of the target therapy, and for example, the cyclin D1 or PIK3CA inhibitors was evaluated for the ESCC in the phase 2 trial, there is not so many efficacy was seen for the targeted therapy, and the amplification of the EGFR or HER2 was seen in the ESCC, and the overexpression was already seen in the ESCC. But some of these inhibitor by the antibody was evaluated also for the metastatic ESCC for the first-line cases or secondary cases in the phase 2 or phase 3 trial. But there is no obvious efficacy was seen adding to the chemotherapy to the target therapy with anti-EGFR antibody or EGFR TKI. So there is no obvious target therapy was developed for the esophageal squamous cell carcinoma right now. But recently the MDM2 amplification or FGFR amplification and the mutation was seen in the ESCC also. So the ESCC, in the ESCC, the FGFR2 inhibitor combined with other targeted drug or the inhibitor of the MDM2 or other targeted therapy was developed for the esophageal squamous carcinoma right now. Recently, the immune checkpoint inhibitor was developed for the esophageal squamous cell carcinoma, and the nivolumab and pembrolizumab or other PD-1 antibody was approved for the esophageal squamous cell carcinoma. As you know, the tumor microenvironment is very important for the efficacy of the immune checkpoint inhibitor. And immune microenvironment in ESCC was consists with many immune cells, including the T cells, and the NK cells or macrophages and the dendritic cell and the other regulatory T cell or myeloid derived cells. And the T cell was containing the helper T cell and the cytotoxic cell like a CD8 positive T cell. And the NK cell is a natural killer cell, provide some cytokine release and the antitumor genetic cells. And the regulatory cell, they regulate the T cell, and sometimes work for the eliminate the immune cells. And also the tumor-associated macrophage related to the less efficacy of the immune checkpoint inhibitors. And the MDSC is also provide less effective for the immune checkpoint inhibitor. So inside the tumor cells, the many immune cells were infiltrate the tumor cells, and the balance of the these immune cell is important for the efficacy of the immune checkpoint inhibitors. As I mentioned, that there are many immune cells were infiltrate the tumor cells, and the balance of the immune cells were very important for the efficacy of the immune checkpoint inhibitors. And the balance of the tumor infiltrated lymphocyte is varied across the environment of the through the changing of the tumor, and the effective from the other factors. For example, the radiotherapy was chemotherapy, or the patient's conditions. And the tumor lymphocyte is a predictive role for the immune checkpoint inhibitor. And for example, the increasing of the CD8 cells is related to the efficacy of the immune checkpoint inhibitor, mainly the other cancer types. And the FOXP3 or MDSC or TLEG is related to the less effectiveness of the immune checkpoint inhibitors. And the tumor-associated macrophage related to the shorter survival in the cancer patient. And the other the immune cells is related to the efficacy of the PD-L1 inhibitors. But there are so many factors were exist in the immune cells and the immune therapy. There is no obvious biomarker was established for the biomarker of the immune checkpoint inhibitor right now. Okay, so until now, so the large scale phase 3 trial, for example, the KEYNOTE-180 trial or KEYNOTE-181 trial, was conducted for the global trial as a global trial. Inside this trial, the some biomarker was evaluated for the efficacy, which related to the PD-L1 antibody efficacy. For example, the PD-L1 is one of the most hard biomarker for the PD-L1 antibody for the ESCC. The PD-L1 expression of the tumor cells and the tumor infiltrate lymphocyte was related to the good efficacy of the pembrolizumab and the in this trial. And a group with a PD-L1 high expression had the median OS of the 9.3 months, and 6.7 months with chemotherapy. And there is a obvious the difference between the chemotherapy of the with the pembrolizumab. And PD-L2 is associated with unfavorable clinical outcome in the esophageal cancer, but there is not so robust evidence for the as a biomarker related to the efficacy of the PD one antibody. And the MSI high is a known biomarker for the higher the efficacy with the PD-1 antibody across the cancer types. And the pembrolizumab was approved for the MSI high esophageal cancer. But the frequency of the MSI high tumor in esophageal cancer is very low and less than 2%. And recently, the tumor mutation burden was known biomarker for the positive efficacy for the PD-L1 antibody, also in the ESCC. So more than the 10 mutation burden for a tumor, more than 10 mutation per megabase associated to the better efficacy of the PD-1 antibody in the ESCC. And the EGFR is the overall expressing the more than 50% of the ESCC tumor. And they correlated significantly the tumor invasion and the progression and the proliferation. But it, as I mentioned, the EGFR inhibitor is not correlated to the efficacy in the ESCC. And there is not so many the evidence for the relationship of the EGFR and the PD-1 antibody efficacy. So we should continue to the research to seek the biomarker for the ESCC.
Thank you for those interesting insights, Professor Cato. In the second interview, Dr. Jean-Philippe Meget provides an overview of current phase 3 trials for the first-line treatment of ESCC. In this interview, he shares expert insights on key mechanisms of action that are being exploited by immunotherapies and likely clinical implications for patients with ESCC based on the latest data.
I'm Jean-Philippe Meget. I'm full professor of oncology in University Hospital of Brest in Brittany, in far west of France. And I'm very involved in the management of digestive cancer, and especially in esophageal and esogastric cancer. That's normally the subject of our discussion today. We have to assume that during decades and decades, we have only chemotherapy. And unfortunately, we have very relatively bad results. For the first time, we have results from immunotherapy. The key mechanism of immunotherapy is the same in melanoma, in lung cancer. You have anti-PD-1 and PD-L1, and you have the opportunity to have an addition with anti-CTL4. The main strategy actually in first line was to use, first of all, the single agent as immunotherapy, but we move rapidly to the association between chemotherapy and immunotherapy, and that's the way actually of the very important trial we have in the two last years. First of all, we have to assume that we can find ESCC in Europe, in US, but also, and it's very important, in Asia and especially in China. So when we look the fast free trial we have to assume that you can have a study from people who are only living in China and with exclusive Chinese people. And you can have a trial from structure in Europe, in US and in Asia. And that's this type of worldwide study. So we have several types of results, actually, and we have to say that we have mature study and we have also ongoing study. So when you look to mature study, the first one is probably the KEYNOTE-590, where you have four apart squamous cell carcinoma, about 72% of patients. And in this study, you have 50-50 percent of patients, ASEAN and non-ASEAN people. And the results of this study are very interesting due to the fact that you have a multi-primary test with an analysis of ESCC altogether, intent to treat patient, and patient with a CPS superior to 10 with ESCC, or people who have adenocarcinoma and squamous cell carcinoma with CPS superior to 10. And we are able to provide with a median follow-up of 36.8 months, which is clearly a very important point, that people have clearly a gain altogether if they have squamous cell carcinoma in terms of overall survival and PFS, and people who are ESCC plus CPS superior to 10. The other study, for example, the CONSORT 1, which have been published in JAMA, are very interesting and are clearly positive with a new anti-PD-1 drug. But we have to assume that all the patients are Chinese people, and probably it's difficult to compare to our patients in Europe and in US. The two other studies, which are Orient 15 and Jupiter, are two studies from China too, positive study potentially. We have to have the final results. We have not for now, but we have clearly a tendency to say that we have some proof in order to be sure that immunotherapy plus chemotherapy is the way. And then you have the CheckMate 648. We can discuss about the design due to the fact that in one arm you have only immunotherapy, and you have so several groups, immunotherapy, chemotherapy, and immunotherapy plus chemotherapy. But it's clearly a positive study, and we have actually all of this study with a level of knowledge, as I say to you, very different, but clearly an enormous tendency to say that immunotherapy is the way. And then you have ongoing study with other type of a drug, and probably the association between immunotherapy and other target, like Tiagate, for example. So enormous type of results with very good impact for our patient. First of all, the fact that you give the opportunity to the patient to have an improvement in overall survival is strategic. But the second point is the quality of life, and in association, the side effect you give to the patient. You have to assume that in this trial, in the both arm, you have chemotherapy. So a comparison between chemotherapy plus immunotherapy versus chemotherapy alone is a very important point, but you have in the both arm the side effect of chemotherapy. So the additional side effect and the importance of the additional side effect if you add immunotherapy has to be clearly shown, and you have no exceptional side effect, and you have no incredible side effect with a relatively big follow-up. I mean, if you have very short time, you are not able to speak about the long-term follow-up of this kind of side effect if you have for immunotherapy. And for example, in the 590 study KNOT, I present the very last follow-up in the last ASCO GI meeting 2 weeks ago. You have no additional side effect. But that's the very important point. The second point is the fact that you stop at the moment the chemotherapy. So you are able to say that the impact of an aggressive chemotherapy when you stop it at the moment is probably a very important point. You have no follow-up of the comparison between side effect when you have immunotherapy alone versus a placebo plus an additional part of chemotherapy. But I think it's very important to have it in the next future. First of all, we can speak about the approval in US and the approval in Europe. If you look, for example, for the approval for pembrolizumab in first line, in US, we decide to give for all the patients with squamous cell carcinoma, and also for adenocarcinoma. But for squamous cell carcinoma, they give the approval for all the patients. And it's based on the fact that patients in the 590 study are first worldwide study, and second, that one of the main primary endpoints is ESCC altogether. On the other hand, the Europe decide to give the opportunity to the patient to have the access in squamous cell carcinoma, but only in CPS superior to 10, based on the fact that the hazard ratio is better. And we can have a big discussion about that, but the way is to say that Europe say that, I'm European, so I will do that. But I have to assume that if you have several main objectives and that all the objectives are positive, and for example, for squamous cell carcinoma, all the patient has a real improvement, it's a pity to me to say that you are going to take to only a part of patients. So we have to discuss next future to improve companion tests, to be sure to give the right way to the right patient. But we have to be happy due to the fact that we have several results, that we wait for new anti-PD-1 from China, for example, and to see if we can improve for a part the strategy for our patient. But the great news is we improve, and we absolutely need for our patient to have this improvement as soon as possible by a clear and important access, I speak in French, for example, for this patient.
Thank you, Dr. Merger, for that valuable update. Let's turn our attention to the second line treatment of ESCC now. In the third and final interview of this activity, Dr. Radka Obermanova provides an overview of the current phase 2 and 3 trials for the second line treatment of ESCC. She shares her expert insights on the likely clinical implications for patients with ESCC based on the latest clinical data and with the developments in first-line treatment, which were covered in the previous interview with Dr. Merger in mind.
So up to now, 5 similar studies of PD-1 inhibitors have reported encouraging clinical efficacy in patients with esophageal squamous cell carcinoma after first-line therapy. These studies, including KEYNOTE-181 with pembrolizumab, attraction-free with nivolumab, escort trial with camrelizumab, and RATIONALE-302 with tislelizumab, and ORIENT-2 with sintilimab. In these studies, the median overall survival of PD-L1 inhibitor groups are all greater than 7 months, and the hazard ratios for overall survival are all lesser than 0.8. When we look at the Kaplan-Meier survival curves for overall survival, they were shown to diverge beyond 3 to 6 months. That indicates that for patients who responded to immunotherapy, there could be a longer overall survival. I would start with KEYNOTE-181. This was a global phase 3 study that involved not only squamous cell carcinoma, but also both histologic subtypes, also adenocarcinoma. And pembrolizumab was compared to investigators' choice chemotherapy. And it reached pembrolizumab treatment reached a hazard ratio 0.78. Unfortunately, this trial was not successful in this primary and didn't meet the primary boundary for statistical significance. And also for patients who were out of Asia, there was not the same clinical benefit like for Asian patients, and it led to EMA didn't approve this kind of treatment, and this treatment was approved only in patient population, but by FDA, only in patients who were CPS more than equal or more than 10 and in squamous cell carcinoma. In terms of attraction-free study that investigated nivolumab in the same line of setting, this was the phase 3 Asian study. Majority of patients were 96 patients from Asia. Nivolumab also showed benefit similar like we saw in KEYNOTE 181. And finally, you can see in the right rational 302. This was trial that a phase 3 global study that enrolled not only patients from Asia but also 20% of patients from North America and from Europe. And this tislelizumab also consistently showed overall survival benefit more than 7 months and with hazard ratio 0.70. Next two trials were conducted only in China. This was ESCORT trial. This was phase 3 Chinese study, also only in a squamous cell cancer that tested camrelizumab, and it showed hazard ratio 0.71. The second one was Orient 2 with sintilimab versus chemotherapy with the same benefit in and same hazard ratio. It's important to say that all these trials, except sintilimab trial, showed the more higher benefit in patients when PD-L1 was expressed. But in Orient 2, the benefit was observed in all the subgroups. And finally, I would like to mention Ramona trial, which was phase 2 German study. That is interesting because evaluated combination of nivolumab and ipilimumab versus chemotherapy. So far, only interim analysis was published, and estimated study completion date will be in November 2022. But in terms of safety, we have already obtained some data, and I will mention them later. In terms of safety, we got quite similar information, and it means that across the trials in a checkpoint inhibitor arm, the grade 3 to 5 adverse events were observed in 18 to 20% in all these compounds, like pembrolizumab, nivolumab, tislelizumab, and higher percentage of side effects was observed in the chemotherapy arms, means from 40% to 64%, depend on the chemotherapy regimen. Most common adverse events in KEYNOTE in pembrolizumab arm was anemia and asthenia. In nivolumab arm, it was 2% of anemia, and in tislelizumab they observed also anemia and increased AST, increased liver test increased. When we look at the other trials, the ESCORT and the Chinese trials, ESCORT and Orient, you can see again that grade 3 to 5 adverse events were observed in 19% and 20% of patients, and consistently in chemotherapy arm, they were higher side effects from 40 to around 40%. And most common, there was no surprise in terms of safety in this trial. The most common side effects was anemia, and in sintilimab, maybe it should be mentioned that it was pulmonary inflammation in 5% of patients. And additionally, this is in Ramona trial when they combined this CTLA-4 ipilimumab 1 milligram with nivolumab with nivolumab 3 milligrams. There was a side effects in this arm almost 45%. But it was just interim analysis and details were not reported. Yes, current treatment guidelines, ESMO guidelines, are currently under construction, and they will be available in 4 or 6 weeks. But currently, the second line of treatment will be influenced by, of course, this is subsequent line of treatment, and it will be influenced by first line chemotherapy, and as we know, in first line there were several trials published that showed the efficacy of a combination of immunotherapy and combination of immunotherapy and chemotherapy, but also the combination of immunotherapy, namely in checkmate 64, 648, the both exploratory arm, we showed higher efficacy comparing to chemotherapy. It means that first line, when in future will be the standard of care, combination of immunotherapy, checkpoint inhibitor, and chemotherapy, or there will be also available in some patients nivolumab plus ipilimumab, that was shown in CheckMate 648. The subsequent treatment will be quite complicated because we don't have data for immunotherapy after immunotherapy for continuation with checkpoint inhibitors after the first line treatment failure. So difficult to say, probably the chemotherapy will be an option, and in case that the immunotherapy was not used in the first line of first line treatment, then immunotherapy will be available according to data from these five trials that were mentioned previously. The particular situation will be in patients with comorbidities. As we know, patients with squamous cell carcinoma are patients. It's particular group of patients who suffer from comorbidities, but. I think that monotherapy with immune checkpoint inhibitors is quite safety, and it showed that only around 20% percent of patients suffers from a serious adverse event grade 3 to 8. So I think that treatment in second line in patients with comorbidity will depend on individual treatment decision.
Dr. Obermanova, thank you for sharing your expert insights. Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on head and neck cancer, gastrointestinal oncology, and immunotherapy at www.touchoncology.com.